This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Recently, two New Hampshire courts have ruled against a state tax known as the Medicaid Enhancement Tax, or MET, which brings in a lot of money to the state's coffers, and that's caused a lot of concern at the State House. Joining me now for more on this is Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Kevin, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Laura.
And also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
You can join us as well with your questions and comments on this. If this tax goes away, and that is not yet a certain thing, how might we fill the hole? Also, your questions just on the MET, how it works, what it's meant for the state budget thus far. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So, Steve and Kevin, this can get pretty dry, so let's try not to do that. Steve Norton, to you first, please. What's the Medicaid Enhancement Tax? Give us your best layperson definition.
You can think of it as a tax on activities that hospitals do in their facilities. They're taxed, and historically that money has flown to the state and gone directly back to the hospitals, and that action draws down additional federal dollars, which is what all this largesse everyone is talking about, how this really began back in 1991 with then-Governor Judd Gregg. Since that time, there's been lots of changes in it, in part because the federal government said what we were doing wasn't necessarily appropriate. And beginning in about 2006, 2005, the state made a series of changes which put it in compliance with federal law, which in essence then taxed hospitals, brought that money into the state coffers, distributed it to hospitals, and in that process, draw down additional federal revenues.
So we still got the federal funds.
Still got the federal funds. Well, what happened in the last budget session was the legislature took a big chunk of that money out of it and put it directly into the general fund.
Because it was a big budget deficit
big
and they needed
deficit.
Cash.
They needed cash. And as a result, made a series of fairly significant losers in the hospital world, largely hospitals in the southern part of the state. And that really resulted in some very close looks at the tax by the hospitals and by the Division of Revenue Administration. And really, that's where the court cases led from. So that's really the story at this point.
So, Kevin, the hospitals said, hey, whoa, we've played ball with you all these years, state government, and now you're pulling the rug out from underneath us. And Steve's right. They sued. What's been the sort of basic nugget of these court cases, Kevin?
Well, essentially, the hospital lawyers are arguing the following, that this is an unconstitutional tax because all classes of taxpayers are not treated the same. This Medicaid Enhancement Tax taxes inpatient services by hospitals and also outpatient services. And it's the latter that's getting the state into legal trouble. And it's probably not going to stand even on appeal at the Supreme Court for the following reason. If I get physical therapy at the hospital for a knee injury that I've suffered, that is subject to the Medicaid Enhancement Tax. But if I go to an independent physical therapy office and have the same service provided by that physical therapy office, that service is not taxed.
Interesting.
And the hospitals, we had a commission that met this past year with hospital representatives, with state officials, with leading legislators on the subject. And the hospitals essentially came forward and said, look, we'd be okay if you just taxed inpatient services because that's uniquely our territory. But once you start taxing outpatient services, that puts us at a huge competitive disadvantage. We're paying a tax, a 5.5% tax, by the way, among the highest such provider taxes in the country, in a state that provides among the lowest Medicaid reimbursement rates in the country. So these hospitals feel incredibly financially squeezed, and they've gone to court to try and overturn it.
And they've won two of these cases. And Steve, can you give us a little more, too, on this odd arrangement where Kevin says some types of medical services are taxed, but others aren't? I think that's the crux of these lawsuits.
Yeah, I mean, the crux is the definition of a class of taxpayers and how the judges interpret it. I think Kevin's right. There's the one possible interpretation is that they base it on services. But I think there's certainly an argument to be made that as a class of taxable entities. Hospitals are different than other facilities or mm-hmm. other activities. So I'm not a lawyer, but I think there's certainly enough uncertainty out there that no one really knows how the court might rule on this yet.
So inpatient services, Kevin, just to make it crystal clear, if I go into a hospital for physical therapy for my knee, the hospital pays a tax on that. If I go to a freestanding PT, you know, in downtown Concord, the state doesn't get any money from that.
That's correct. It's really important. It's really important too to point out how this all came about. I mean, we're talking about $185 million right now at risk each year. That's kind of chump change compared to what happened in 1991. We need to remember that in 1991, all seven of the state's largest banks went belly up. In 1991, the state's largest electric utility went bankrupt, Public Service Company in New Hampshire. In 1991, we had 28 months in a row in which state revenues came in lower than the same month the year before. It literally chased Judd Gregg out of his state house office in 1991 to run for U.S. Senate in 1992.
Because it was so not fun being governor at that point.
Exactly. And there was such a we talk about structural deficits today, and we do have a structural deficit in our budget today. But back then, due to the hemorrhaging of state revenues, it was even more severe. And Governor Gregg and others were desperate. A former Democratic Senator, Wayne King, who later ran for governor, was friendly with folks in Massachusetts in their Health and Human Services Department. And Governor Mike Dukakis, who then ran for president in 88, had found this provider tax provision. New Massachusetts was one of the first states to look at this. They discussed it with Senator King. Senator King came to Judge Gregg with this idea. Greg liked it, but only under this provision, and it goes back to what Steve said before. Remember, he's thinking of running for the U.S. Senate to replace Warren Rudman. He's not about to support a new tax. So he only supports this Medicaid enhancement scheme if the hospitals are fully paid back. So it's just a legal loophole that the state utilizes to maximize federal reimbursement and the hospitals are made whole. Like we've talked about here, for 20 years, that was a hunky-dory arrangement between the state and the hospitals. Now they're at war because the hospitals are no longer getting paid what they paid in.
Hunky-dory and heavily duty bipartisan, it sounds like, Kevin, for a long, long time.
For a long time, very much so. And very lucrative for the state of New Hampshire. By 1999, National Conference of State Legislators had done a survey of all provider states and found New Hampshire had the highest per capita reimbursement from this scheme of any state in the country.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us with your questions, comments, thoughts about this Medicaid enhancement tax that has been, well, hit down by two courts recently, although it hasn't gone to the state Supreme Court yet. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. And by the way, if this tax goes away, how might New Hampshire fill the hole? Join us with your thoughts, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. So, Steve Norton, you're a longtime budget watcher. If this tax does go away, how much money does that represent for the state?
Well, there are really two questions there. Well, the first is, do the parties have an incentive to solve this problem before it gets to a budget problem? And I think the answer is absolutely yes. If, let's just say, we did get to the next budget period, which would happen if the hospitals don't pay the tax in October, and we had a say $100 million, $185 million hole, what would happen? Number one, we'd be short about $75 million of general funds, just that are used for all purposes, you know, healthcare and otherwise. And there's a whole pot of money that's in the Medicaid program that is already going to hospitals that would also be up in the air. And then there's the disproportionate share program, which is a way of distributing dollars to largely rural hospitals. Those rural hospitals have a pretty significant incentive to keep that money flowing. So I think that we're likely to see a situation in which we come up with a negotiated agreement about how to go forward in a way that everyone agrees is constitutional.
So to say, Steve, this tax could go away is a little bit alarmist.
I think it is a little bit alarmist. I think that we're likely to see a couple of things. One, we heard Senator Moore say in Finance Committee this past week that they're looking for a solution and they're also looking for a way of ending this program over time.
Interesting. And phasing it out slowly instead of slashing it all at once.
That's right.
And, yeah.
So yeah, now if we were to get to a crisis situation, it creates a cash flow problem, but not one that is as bad as the $200 million shortfall that Judd Gregg faced back in 1991, as Kevin said. But nonetheless, there would have to be budget changes, either on the revenue side or the spending side.
Well, and to your point, Steve, that this does have a big impact on individual health care facilities around the state. Here's an email from Tim in Keene. He says, for what it's worth, the MET represents the difference between us having a budget that is in the red versus the black at Cheshire Medical Center, something on the order of $6 million. Tim says the legislature should either decide to tax all capitalized healthcare facilities to make it more equitable, or figure out a different way to generate revenue for the state budget. To you, Kevin Landrigan, is there talk in the legislature about, instead of saying, okay, what do we do if this tax goes away, saying, let's expand it to everybody, all healthcare providers?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. David Hasselhoff, that Republican, went to that same meeting of the Senate Finance Committee this year and essentially said there's a very simple way to address this problem in the short term. And that is to broaden the base of the tax to include all those who provide health care services. That's a direct quote. He's talking about not limiting this Medicaid enhancement tax to just hospitals, but, in fact, broaden the tax. The commission also talked about actually getting rid of the commission that studied this issue also talked about getting rid of the Medicaid enhancement tax and taxing services provided under Medicaid, under the insurance premium tax, which they're nonprofit. These services are for low-income folks, for government-subsidized people getting health insurance. They're not now subject to the insurance premium tax. That could be another way to do away with this tax to generate some revenue. I just want to talk about a few things Steve sort of touched upon there that are why the hospitals have a great incentive. You remember, Laura, of course, during the great debate over expanding Medicaid, hospitals wanted it badly. And here's why as it relates to this discussion. There's every expectation that once you put 50,000 low-income adults on Medicaid, then this uncompensated care that hospitals are now providing that runs in the order of $450 million a year will go down significantly. Now, the state, as part of this Medicaid enhancement tax, the state pays hospitals right now $31 million in so-called uncompensated care payments.
Right, to make up for what they don't get from those patients.
Exactly. Sure. But this Medicaid expansion could reduce that uncompensated care cost a great deal more than $31 million. Meanwhile, as part of this global agreement to expand Medicaid, the state, the hospitals have agreed to allow the state to go to the federal government for what's called the Section 1115 waiver, which essentially says this: hey, there are all kinds of services out there that are eligible under Medicaid that the state is not receiving Medicaid money for. Mental health care with the expansion of Medicaid becomes a mandated benefit. So does substance abuse. In many cases, these are folks who are going to be either newly eligible for Medicaid or who have been on Medicaid, but we haven't been getting the proper reimbursement from the federal government. There, Senate President Chuck Morse believes this waiver could generate as much as $50 million a year in additional Medicaid reimbursement for the state. So these are the reasons why there's going to be a patch on this flat tire. And then there's going to be this year before this session ends. And then there's going to be a whole undercarriage built on the health care delivery tax system for the next legislature and the next governor. Because it's only then, say, 8 months, a year from now, we're going to know how much benefit this expanded Medicaid is going to provide to reduce this big gap we're now looking at, $185 million.
So a lot of questions that will be resolved, Steve Norton, as time goes on, and then we'll be able to figure out what that patch on that tire that Kevin mentions will look like. What about the state Supreme Court then, Steve? I mean, again, these two court decisions have been lower courts. Do you expect the state Supreme Court to weigh in on this?
I do, and the timing of it will obviously depend on what the legislature does to put the patch on the flat tire, as Kevin said, I think very aptly describing what the legislature is likely to do. You know, talking to folks in the court system, maybe a year to identify all the issues and have the Supreme Court look through this question. So I don't imagine it to be a short-term issue, but one in the long term. And I think it'll come down to the question of what is a class, and is a hospital a class in and of itself, and or can you differentiate based on services as the lower courts have done?
Well, and the New Hampshire Constitution, right, Steve, says you can't have different classes of taxpayers.
That's right. So, and the judge took the notion that the definition of a class was based on the services that are being provided rather than the definition in, say, licensure law, which says hospitals are different than ambulatory care centers.
Yeah. What's the politics of this, Kevin, going forward? You and Steve seem to be saying, maybe the parties are going to need to come together on this.
Yeah, I think they are. This is real dicey. I think all parties at the State House do not believe a global settlement is possible before the end of this session, meaning a solution that not only fixes this problem, but gets the hospitals to essentially drop their litigation, which I think in the long term, that's what the state is looking for. There's no belief that's going to happen. Because there's an election here, this has to be a very carefully crafted short-term fix. It's got to give Governor Maggie Hassan, a one-term Democrat. It's got to give Senate President Chuck Morse, a new Senate leader with a very slight Republican majority, political comfort that they're doing a partial fix to the problem. It's not going to give them long-term headaches on the ballot box this November.
So
there's not going to be any new tax. There's not going to be any attempt to make sweeping changes that make either of them politically vulnerable.
Okay, so some careful threading of the needle, Steve Norton,
yeah,
right?
Exactly right.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you very much for taking some time out to explain this to us. Kevin Landrigan, good to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Great to be with you.
Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
I really appreciate it. Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer today is Ross Boyd. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The House votes once again on a casino bill and once again says no, but it's incredibly close. Meanwhile, a Senate committee also votes nay on a higher state minimum wage. And from healthcare to hockey, the Twitter wars heat up in New Hampshire's U.S. Senate race. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where we get support from you, our listeners, and from M&C Clothing and Gifts in Nashua, with expanded offerings, including recycled clothing for men, women, and teens, plus fair trade and green products, online at mothersays.com. And from Stay Work Play New Hampshire, providing information about New Hampshire to the 20 and 30-something demographic to encourage them to stay, work, and play in the state. StayWorkPlay.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The U.S. middle class is no longer the world's richest. Recent analysis shows that while wealthy Americans still outpace their peers in other advanced countries, our middle class is falling behind. That news comes at a time when nearly